enormous downward revisions on the labor market, and the Fed releasing its minutes telling us that cuts are around the corner. Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. In today's economic update, we are going to talk about the mass manipulation of data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. We're also going to discuss the FOMC minutes that just came out, released from the July meeting, talking about how rate cuts are here. And finally, we are going to take a tour around markets, focusing today on the yield curve and the very intense signals that we're getting from nuanced parts of the yield curve, as well as look at Bitcoin and other risk markets price action. All right, let's take a look at the first huge headline we had this morning. U.S. payrolls marked down by most since 2009 in preliminary data. Early revision showed 818,000 fewer jobs in year through March. Pace of job growth still healthy, but moderation began sooner. So what did we learn? Basically, the entire year from March 2023 to March 2024 has been overstated by 818,000 jobs. Now, the whisper number out there was a million, so the market understood that this was coming, a huge downward revision to the jobs data. But I want to point out something that's very important. Jerome Powell, chairman of the Fed, has acknowledged this very fact that we were going to receive huge downward revisions in the labor data due to statistical anomalies. They say anomalies, but really what they mean is that the statistics that have been put out by the BLS have been mostly BS for the last year. And so that is all reversing now with this huge one-time 818,000 negative revision. We might see more. We might see further revisions here. What is the point? What is the signal? First of all, the NFP number that comes out every month, the first Friday of every month, that jobs data number that every financial media outlet loves to publicize, it doesn't mean anything. It is wildly manipulated. That is due to several factors. One is the birth-death adjustment. The NFP number and the BLS, the way that they calculate data, is highly manipulated, and it is understood, it's well understood, that because BLS is an arm of the government, the executive branch can use the BLS to basically get the data where it wants it. So this is something that the Bitcoin Layer has flagged for you. Joe and I have talked about this. Joe has done a few episodes focusing on the fact that the BLS is putting out absolutely BS data. Now, when we talk about ISM, services and manufacturing, and we tell you that we get a ton of signal in the readings and the subcomponents, including the employment subcomponent of both of these ISM surveys, we're telling you that that is the more relevant unemployment data versus what the BLS tells you. The Bitcoin Layer is proud to be sponsored by Unchained, the leader in Bitcoin financial services. Unchained empowers you to take full control of your Bitcoin with collaborative multi-sig vaults where you hold two of three keys and benefit from a Bitcoin security partner. This is a really important feature. You can purchase Bitcoin directly into your cold storage with Unchained's trading desk and completely eliminate your exchange risks. Unchained also offers the best IRA product in the industry. You can convert easily your 401k or IRA into Bitcoin while keeping control of your keys. Don't pay more in taxes than you have to. Go talk to them today, unchained.com/TBL, and make sure you use code TBL for $99 off when you create an account. Billions of dollars in digital assets have already been stolen in 2024. The shocking part? Mobile carrier security is the cause. Stealing your phone number through a SIM swap attack has never been easier. Hackers can use your phone number to access your Bitcoin wallet, bank and email data, and even your social media accounts. The solution? Ifani. Unlike regular carriers, Ifani locks SIM transfers by default while still offering top-tier AT&T and Verizon service. Switch your phone service to Ifani today and protect your assets. Go to ifani.com/TBL and use code TBL to save $99. Okay, so here's the important part of the article here. Before the report, the BLS's initial payrolls figures indicated employers added 2.9 million total jobs during the period, or an average of 242,000 per month. So that's why we've been getting these headlines. The economy added 230,000 jobs per month. But now the monthly pace is more likely to be around 174,000, assuming the change is distributed proportionately. So what they're saying is that all of these 242,000 headlines, they should have been 175. They were overstated. And this, again, I'm going to bring back Jerome Powell. They already knew that this was going to happen. They've actually cited the BLS for having highly manipulated data. And when the Fed told you that this revision was coming, and Powell acknowledged it, they said that rate cuts were also coming around the same time. And that is what we have to focus on here. So the rate cuts that will start on September 18th, those rate cuts were locked in from the moment Powell and company learned about these revisions. We can't know exactly when they knew it, but the market knew this was coming for quite some time. Large discrepancies in the data versus the actual model that is published. And now we are going to see the Fed cut rates, and we have to measure how aggressively they're going to cut based off of some of these revisions. Because were they hiking into really good data when the data that they were hiking into was being manipulated in the first place? Now, the second large headline that we had, again, another rates mover. Where are rates going? Obviously lower. This is what we've been trying to communicate to you guys. The big headline that we got around midday, Fed minutes show several saw a case for cutting rates in July. Vast majority saw a September cut as likely appropriate. Some saw a risk of more serious labor market deterioration. So what did we learn now? We learned that a lot of the Fed wanted to get it started in July. This is pretty significant news. It has taken rates a little bit lower today during the session. But largely what we want to take away from this is that the Fed knows that 5.5% is extreme. So when we talk about restrictive easing policy, tight policy, 5.5% is now nowhere on the scale of easy to tight. It's over tight. Now, I understand that stocks are basically at an all-time high and that financial conditions generally are not that tight. I understand that completely. But the economy is starting to show that 5.5% policy rates are unsustainable, because even though asset prices remain elevated, is the Fed's stated mandate asset prices, or is that the implicit mandate? And it's the implicit mandate we know, because when stocks crash, the Fed comes into ease. But the Fed's public mandate remains maximum employment balancing price stability. So that maximum employment is now severely threatened by 5.5% policy rates. The point is that because 5.5% isn't on the scale, it's off the scale, they have to get back on the scale. Where does the scale probably end? Somewhere around 4.5% to 5%. So you can expect at least 50 to 100 basis points immediately, you know, and so but within the next few meetings. That is just to get it back from 5.5% to 4.5%, where they can actually say, okay, 4.5% now where policy rates are is somewhat appropriate for an economy that's still struggling with inflation but is being threatened by unemployment. 5.5%, they can't physically justify it anymore, which is why we see this headline. Several saw the case for cutting rates in July. And here's the quote from the minutes. Several observed that the recent progress on inflation and increases in the unemployment rate had provided a plausible case for reducing the target range 25 basis points at this meeting. So that meaning July. Now, this tells us that the data that the Fed knew was happening, meaning they're either the spot data or the revisions that they were told are actually coming, warranted the cut. But probably what happened behind closed doors is that the Fed understood broadly that until the market had the information of this 818,000 job revision lower, until the market had it, they couldn't cut. That's pretty much what I'm taking away from this. So the cut in September, not only is it locked in, but the move from 5.5 to 4.5 is also locked in. That's my opinion here. The market pretty much has that over the next 3 meetings or so, but you know the market chops around. What I'm completely convinced on is the direction and the minimum by which the Fed will have to cut. Now, once you get to 4.5, you've already cut policy rates by 1%. That gives you some breathing room to say, okay, what are the balance of risks here? You guys know my base case that they're coming to 3.5 at least. So 2% of cuts are coming. There's no way for me to know the time horizon there. What I'm confident is that they will come down at least 1% and probably 2%. The at least 1%, it's becoming more and more clear that that will happen quickly, rápidamente. But in the longer term, you have to understand that I cannot physically know how quickly or how long it will take for rates to get down to 3.5% on the policy front, because I can't know what the data is going to be in the economy in 3 to 6 months. What I know is the trailing data, and the trailing data definitely warrants the cut to 4.5% on the policy rate at a minimum. Now, I want to go straight from the economy to the charts. We'll start with U.S. Treasuries, the 10-year yield, the benchmark of the dollar system. Now, the 10-year has fallen to about 3.75% here. It tested 4% after that huge rally, meaning the immense drop in rates from 4.25% down to 3.7%. It bounced to 4%, but now it's back down below 3.8%, heading to 3.75%. And the strength of the Treasury market after that initial bounce in yields higher, so some profit taking, the strength in the Treasury market since it tagged 4% on, let me check the candle here, August 8th. So August 8th, 13 days ago, 2 weeks of price action that is showing you that what happened at the end of July and beginning of August, that serious rally when we had the unemployment report that basically brought the hard landing into play, that rally that we had a couple weeks ago was real. That was the real price action. Then the price consolidates, but the strength at which it's moving down right now tells me something is going on. There is an intense realization right now that rapid cuts are on the way, as well as the threat of recession actually grows with every passing minute. The Treasury price action is skittish. I recognize this type of buying and this type of strength as a risk-off bid and a cutting cycle bid. So I'm really, the Treasury market is sending a ton of signal. Now, I'm going to show you what's going on in the yield curve in just a second. We'll get even more signal from the yield curve. But take the price signal for what it is. We haven't seen yields at 3.75% for a very long time. And it's off the back of yields that got to almost 5%. So a huge rally in treasuries, a lot of strength in this asset class right now, as the entire investment universe understands that if inflation is not there and a rapid cutting cycle is on the way and a potentially recession, that yields at 4% are an enormous bargain and actually offer a lot of value. Now, I want to mention real quickly in terms of what I said previously, I don't know how long it's going to take rates to go down, both on the policy front or the treasury front. That is because the pace at which rates will decline is definitely dependent on the pace of the economy. What are we seeing in the spot economy? A consumer that's okay. Jobless claims that aren't going wild. They're definitely creeping up. Consumer is definitely coming into problems. But the spot data, we don't know how manipulated it is or how much revision is going to knock it down in several months. We don't know that. All we know is the data that we're given. Some of it is higher signal than others. That's why we focus on ISM. But what we know is that the economy is slowing. We don't know how much it's slowing by, and we don't know how intense that slowing is going to be. So there's no way that I can tell you how low rates are going. But what I can tell you, what I did tell you when rates were at 4.5%, 5%, is that they're not going higher. Okay. If you thought rates were going higher from 4.5% to 5%, you don't understand the cycle, the time value of money, and the penalty on the economy that higher rates hold. It is a cycle. These things are cyclical. And when rates go up, it penalizes the entire economy, and then they have to go down in response to the slowing. There's no magic force that can keep rates going up and up if there is no persistent inflation. And that's what it comes down to. The impulse from the inflation from 2021 to 2022, and that's still with us today, it is not strong enough to demand a 5, 6, 7% rate of return from the US government. The market is telling us that. Now, if people disagree with that, they don't have to buy treasuries and try to get a nominal return of 4% when they feel their own inflation rate is 10%. I am not suggesting that, but I know how much capital is based in the US dollar system. I understand the quantity of risk assets and the quantity of treasuries. And those two things, the quantity of risk versus the quantity of treasuries, is an imbalance that I think it's misunderstood and it's underappreciated. We're talking about hundreds of trillions in risk assets versus, and I say only because I really do mean it, only 25 trillion in investable treasuries. I understand the debt's at 35. The Fed owns a lot of that, intergovernmental agencies. So less than 30 trillion of available marketable treasury securities versus hundreds of trillions of other risk assets. Where do you think the money goes when things get tough? It goes to treasuries. So there's no Fed buying that's driving the treasuries lower. That's QE. That's not happening. QE actually sends yields higher because of the behavioral effect of QE. The Fed will come to buy treasuries and expand its balance sheet, but that's not happening yet. And it's definitely not the force that's driving yields lower. The force that is driving yields lower is investors trying to lock in risk-free yield of 4%. Because they know it won't be there in a couple years. It'll be at 3 or it'll be at 2. And so just trying to lock in, you can see the demand on the chart. I can feel it myself that the strength in the treasury market is telling us that a broader risk off move is at play. Now, the stock market being so stubbornly strong is sending mixed messages. And that's why it's causing investors to be like, no, a no landing or a soft landing is still possible. I'll say one last thing on the stock market relative to the treasury market. We are not equity market analysts at the Bitcoin layer. we are Bitcoin analysts, and we are money markets analysts, and we are U.S. Treasuries rates analysts. So risk in terms of the stock market, it is part of our framework, but we understand that the drivers of stocks are so multifold that we have to focus on our core competency, which is Bitcoin and rates and the financial system, the plumbing of it all. So money markets, that includes repo, which we rely heavily on our understanding of repo and repo rates. And so it is through that understanding of treasuries, money markets, that rates are heading lower, and they're in a period of heading lower right now because we are getting into that Fed cutting, economy slowing, and inflation expectations slowing. All right, now we've shown you the 2s, 10s yield curve. This is the difference between the 10 and the 2-year part of the treasury curve. So 10-year yield minus 2-year yield. So when the 2-year yield is higher than the 10-year, that puts this curve at a negative or an inverted state. We have shown you the breakout here of the steepening, the re-steepening of the curve. That is when 2-year yields will finally fall under 10-year yields, and showing the market, showing us or suggesting that the policy rate is now no longer super restrictive, and actually the future growth and inflation expectation is higher than where the spot market says that it is. That would be a steep curve, but we don't get it yet. We flagged a breakout and it's trying to steepen, but the Fed hasn't started cutting yet. So even though we got the minutes today suggesting that cuts are really here and are starting soon, the market doesn't love it yet. It doesn't think it's enough. We'll need to see at least that 5.5% to 4.5% policy rate for this curve to really start to steepen out. Remember, 2-year yields are at 4%. Policy rates are 5.5%. So the 2-year yield already assumes 1.25% of cuts at the minimum. So the first 1% is barely going to do it. The Fed really is going to have to cut a lot more for this curve to steepen out. Now, the second curve I want to show you, something that we don't talk about that often, but it's something I watch, the 2s-5s yield curve. This is not the 2s-10s, but just the difference in 2s-5s. 2s-5s has a different sort of signal that I want to give to you. Now, 2s-5s, 5s is pretty much the forward policy rate to the extreme, whereas the 10-year yield is not really used as a policy rate derivative. It's more used as a growth and inflation derivative. So the 5-year part of the curve is basically an extension of the 2-year part of the curve. So when 2s and 5s get inverted, meaning 5s are much below 2s, it suggests that from the 2-year point to the 5-year point, there's a lot of cuts that are expected. We saw that at the end of 2023. You can see this curve was negative 75 basis points. So about a year ago, the market was telling you that from the 2-year period to the 5-year period forward, there will be a lot of rate cuts. That was accurate. That was signal. It was the market telling you that forward rate cuts are basically locked in here. The 5-year investors not whatsoever willing to relinquish their treasury holdings in and exchange for a 2-year that's higher yield because they know the path. It's going lower. We take so much signal from the yield curve, guys. That's why we weren't fooled by higher yields. It didn't fool us. The inverted curve was telling you that the demand for the longer end of the curve was persistent because the shorter end yields would not remain higher for much longer. Now the 2s-5s curve is steepening out. It's still at negative 28 basis points, but a little bit of a pop here today gave me that feeling that, okay, when 2s-5s finally goes uninverted, it tells you that the cuts are present, that they're not forward. They're not in that 2 to 5 year forward. They're actually in the 0 to 2 year time horizon. And that is a huge thing that we have to factor in. obviously, 5.5% policy rates and 4% twos is 1.5, 1.25 to 1.5 inversion. But twos at 4 and fives at 3.75 is only a 25 basis point inversion. That is going to switch now, where the difference between spot policy rates and twos will shrink from 1.5 to probably 0 here. And that difference will show up in a positive twos fives curve, in that from the 2-year part to the 5-year part, we're actually going to start pricing in hikes because things will be going well by then. But you see that last year, twos fives was severely inverted because the market knew things will be going badly by then. So that's why the curve gives us a lot of signal. I hope that this little curve segment made sense to you guys. Let us know your questions in the comments. All right, I promised we were going to talk about the Bitcoin price. Let's pull up the chart here. I have daily candles for you guys just to show you we are in the range, going up a few thousand dollars or down a few thousand dollars from this 60 level. It gives us no signal whatsoever. We are in the chop, and Bitcoin, until it escapes this range, will really be constrained by the range. Range traders love the chop, and they're able to buy at 55, sell at 65, and just continue to make that churn. The chop traders make money because the convicted investors don't have the impetus to lean into their positions one way or the other. Now, what could be that bump for Bitcoin that it needs? I think a big response from the policy side of things. So it could be fiscal, monetary, or both. We'll probably have to wait for something like that to send liquidity through the system that can end up in Bitcoin, especially with the hype, the margin traders getting involved. None of that will happen until we really get that liquidity impulse. Now, thinking about repo for a second is a good way to think about Bitcoin leverage as well. What is repo? Repo is financing for treasury positions. So if the repo market allows us to finance our treasuries and the repo rate is high, what does it mean? It means that we won't be able to take as much leverage as we want. How do we take more leverage? We have to hope that repo rates go down. How do repo rates go down? Fed cuts, available liquidity, available funding. So cuts and potentially QE. There is a restriction right now in the money markets that nobody is talking about. Repo levels are modestly elevated, not anything that's an emergency. That's why nobody's talking about it, but it's tight. And the reason it's tight is because dealers need inventory to go long. Everybody needs long treasury positions now. They don't have the cash, so they need the repo money for it. Repo is going to fight with bills, also in the money markets. And so tight funding is going to limit the ability to go long. That is the same thing in Bitcoin. When Bitcoin funding rates are modestly expensive, that will obviously be a derivative of US funding levels. It's going to restrict the ability for longs to get involved in the market. But if rate cuts come, it's going to ease the ability for everyone to finance. Remember, treasuries at 4%, financed at 5.5%, is a negative carry every night for the bank. They get accrued interest on their treasury, and they have to pay repo interest out. It's a negative cash flow when your repo rate is 5.5% and your yield is 4%. So the punitive nature of an inverted yield curve applies to the repo market as well. And guess what? It is hidden, but it applies to the Bitcoin market. When rate cuts come, it's going to ease all of those conditions. The labor market is the culprit here. So when the Fed cuts, they will say it's the labor market. But we know where to look, and it's repo. And so if repo is tight, the cuts have to come. The easing has to come. And remember, the Fed is also, it's not going to say we're easing policy. It's going to say we're making policy less restrictive. So that is another BS term to listen out for. It means that they're just trying to cloak the fact that they need to make policy easier. The end of QT, the beginning of rate cuts, the resumption of QE are all in store. Will the Fed actually be able to run off its mortgages or not? That will have a huge impact on risk, I believe, as the Fed sells vol by buying mortgage-backed securities. How does that work? If you are the home borrower and rates go lower, it's your right to refi, so you have the optionality. If the Fed owns mortgages, they've sold you that optionality. What does the Fed do when it sells optionality? It's selling vol, it's suppressing rates volatility because it's there to provide the bid for anybody who wants to have optionality with their fixed income, like home buyers that want the option to move or refinance and repay early. What type of bondholder is willing to sell that optionality? Right now, without the Fed, will that market struggle? Little things like that impact the rest of risk assets, which is why we're so focused on the Fed, so focused on repo. If easing is coming, it's going to make its way throughout the entire market. It is the base case. It is what you should expect too, only giving you the timing on that is impossible. It would basically be a red flag for you if we were trying to tell you the timing of it all. The best we can do is understand the system and where it has to move. Thanks for sticking with us today. Make sure you subscribe to the channel. If you listen, please rate and review on your audio platform. That would help us a lot. And check out our research publication, which is for free twice a week at thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe. We'll catch you guys next time.